Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, Justin Cuthbert, JD Bunkus. Give them a follow at JD Bunkus on Twitter and Instagram, at JC Cuthbert on Twitter. I'm Blake Murphy. Subscribe to the podcast, rate, review, all that good stuff. The Fan Morning Show. It's good karma. It's good payback if you've been running with the Wake and Rake. It's especially good karma if you download today's episode of the show and find the code word, because we're giving away a pair of tickets to the Maple Leafs March 23rd home game against New Jersey. All you have to do is download today's episode of the Fan Morning Show and listen for the special code word that will be placed in the podcast. Once you've located today's code word, text it to 590-590 for your chance to win. The winner will be selected on Friday. Again, download today's episode of the podcast, listen for the code word, text it to 590-590, and maybe we'll send you to Leafs Devils on March 23rd. March 23rd.
I absolutely love... Go March 23rd. I cannot tell you how much I love my bracket this year, because I've gone. I used to be such a chalk bracket guy. It was embarrassing, right? Like, I was such a chalky bracket guy. But I feel like sports betting has, well, two things have happened. Three things have happened. The office pool has been diminished because offices are no longer what they used to be. They're just, you know, a lot of us are still working remote, or our schedules have changed. We're on these hybrid schedules of some days you go in, some days you don't, whatever. Either way, the office is not the office anymore. Two is that we all kind of sports bet off to the side. Used to be that a bracket was the only time where a lot of people would gamble. Now a lot of those people are in on it. You know, they play the Wake and Rake, they make big money, they send us the bet slips, you know, they do those things. And three is that the tournament has been flattened in terms of favorites, right? Like, the tournament used to be so full of so many big, heavy favorites, and now that's not really the case this year. Like, there's a lot of, once you get past the 1-2 seeds, teams that are very close to one. Like, Providence is a 4 seed, and they're playing South Dakota State. I think the spread is 2 today, for example, right? Like, there's a lot of those that are out there. But my bracket is free. Finally, I am free to pick just the full upset non-chalk bracket. It's absurd, my bracket. My bracket is embarrassing almost how many just like long shots there are here. So I'm just all for some real chaos, some real madness today. I'm here for it. Like, we're kicking it off. What a day. I just love this day. This is the best day. This is the best day. We're going wire to wire. It's starting soon. Madness, Blake, it's so good.
Yeah, I got to say, today is the second best day, though, this year. Downgraded, because I have to do the 6 a.m. show tomorrow. You don't. Yeah. So tomorrow will be my best day, because I don't have to do anything on Saturday.
Welcome to being a veteran. Being a veteran is knowing ahead of time the days to take off. And it's like the week of the MLB All-Star game. Guess what? Booking in advance, you know, get ahead of it, get ahead of the schedule, because you're out there doing this show. I can give you a preview of 4 hours of, is the home run derby format cool? Like, do it. It's bad. It's real bad. It's really bad. And they took away the one interesting thing from the MLB All-Star game, which was, hey, should the winner matter for playoffs? And then they were like, no. And I went, oh, well, that was our whole content plan. So thanks for that, Major League Baseball. We appreciate that. Which All-Star game is the best All-Star game? A week of that. Oh, that's a tough one. But also being able to get, you know, just deep into the gambling and into the beers on day one of madness is just, oh, I love it so much. It's the best. So, the Leafs. We have had a show full of trying to parse out essentially the take that I think we've all kind of come around to. And even Cuthbert, for you, where you're like, hey, I think the Leafs really need a defenseman. You've still come around to the idea of you've got to find the leverage point with that defenseman. You're not hard up for one dude in particular. You said Giordano because you think that that's, again, the spot where maybe they could find a little bit of value if Seattle wants to do right by their captain. I'm not buying that, just because if I'm Seattle, I'm going, buddy, you've been our captain for 10 minutes. You're out of here. And also, we sucked and no one paid attention to our season. So nobody even has like a memory of you, you know, like we got to figure out a way to get as many assets in here as possible for the day that we need to finally dump the Grubauer contract, which is arguably the worst in hockey. Right. So, I don't think they're doing him any favors, but
yeah,
we'll put it that way. But either
Giordano's going to get moved, and half of hockey fans are going to be like, oh, I thought Calgary was was doing well. Why are they trading Giordano away?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I just think if you're the Leafs and that information is coming your way of Giordano wants to be a Leaf or that he wants to come to Toronto, then that's awesome. We'll see you in the offseason. You can sign a Wayne Simmons type of deal. You can come home. You can play with the Leafs. They'll put you back with Brody, whatever. But I'm not trading a first-round pick or a second-round pick to rent a guy that's going to sign with you maybe on the cheap this offseason anyway. So, yeah, the way I continue to evaluate this for Kyle Dubas is, hey, you're in a tough spot because there's a lot of pressure, but you're in a good spot in that you have multiple areas of need, as Blake said it, multiple avenues for improvement. So just don't do the panicky move. Don't do the panicky GM move where you overpay in first-round picks and draft capital and prospects in order to try to shore up an area of need, because guess what, Kyle? You have three areas of need. And if we do not have job certainty for Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan beyond this season, which a lot of people believe is true, I don't know if it is, but some people think that those guys' heads roll if they get knocked out in the first round, even if it is to Tampa Bay. But I want to know what the futures of my general managers, what my futures of my front offices entail, if they're going to be moving the likes of Nyes and first-round picks or other things that Frank Saravelli said could be on the table if they're doing stuff like a Hampus Lindholm deal. Justin Bourne, co-host of Real Kipper and Bourne, father extraordinaire, dropping his kid off at camp, making it work, deadline week. He joins us now. What's up, buddy?
Not much, guys. How's it going today?
Hey, it's going well. It's going well.
Good.
I mean, like, you know, March Madness is here. We won the Wake and Rake yesterday.
Wow.
I went and saw stand-up comedy, my friend. You know,
you
I
did?
What
did you see?
Went saw Tim Dillon. It was phenomenal. It was great.
Oh.
And I want you to know that I was still just as mad at everyone who showed up late. I was just as mad at everybody. Like, I have not calmed down in the slightest. If you buy tickets to a comedy show, show up on time, for God's sakes, Toronto. This isn't a hockey game. Like, you know, it's a dark theater. Show up on time. It's not a concert. You have to be there on time. We need to figure out when we're going to one, by the way. We got to figure out Segura, or we got to figure out Bill Burr, but you got to go back. It was
Segura or Burr would be amazing. I assume we're not going to Mulaney based on what happened last time in his life, so that's it.
Mulaney is tough. Mulaney canceled on Bourne and I twice in a row, one of which included where we just showed up to the theater and there was a sign, a piece of paper on the door that said, he's not here. Like, it was tough.
It was like its own comedy act.
Yeah. Yeah,
you bought tickets? Isn't this hilarious? He's not here.
He's not here. That was a tough one. So my case has been this all week, and I want to bounce it off you, which is just simply, I would rather the Leafs stand pat than overpay at this deadline based on the names that I've seen out there. I'm curious if you have a feeling in terms of something they need to acquire, a player that you really want them to pursue. Do you have a strong take heading into this deadline? Because, yeah, I'm not enamored by anybody that's really out there or any option that's out there.
Yeah, I guess I do have a strong take, which is just, I do feel like they have to do something, you know, like, and I know that you don't want to do something for the sake of doing something, but it's impossible to look at, you know, where they're at in the standings, you know, tied for fifth in points percentage in the NHL right now, you know, where the guys are at in their sort of arc with their careers and their ages. And to just be like, to do what the Oilers seem like they're doing is like, we secretly know we're not good enough, and so we don't want to burn ourselves for the future, so we're just going to like slowly march towards our own execution. It just doesn't seem like the answer for this group and the pressure and all that. So, you know, I heard you mention Lindholm, as I came on, not loving Giordano. Yeah, I think it's good that guys have moved early. I think that forces things into motion a little bit, but I definitely need to see something happen. I think something significant. The one thing that, that stands out to me right now is, you know, looking at who's available out there, I don't really like a lot of the guys either. So, like, suddenly the target becomes Lindholm. Like, Manson's gone, Sherratt's gone. You know, Jacob Middleton is a name I heard, but Elliot Friedman mentioned this morning that Travis Dermott is likely on his way out at the deadline. He mentioned that in 32 Thoughts. So all of a sudden, it's like, even if you get a Middleton, all you've done is get another bottom pair guy. I still feel like they need help higher up that D lineup.
How do you play Lindholm, though? Where does he go? Because this doesn't make any sense to me unless you're trading Jake Muzzin.
Well, how certain are you that Jake Muzzin's going to be able to play? Like, this whole, him taking a step back thing is weird to me, and probably is the whole cap circumvention thing. It's probably what's happening there. But if he's really just needs to take a step back because things aren't going well, I mean, playoffs are in 6 weeks. He just had two concussions. Like, it's almost like insurance for me that you're going to have a guy like that. And then I guess you're basically asking Sandin to play the right side on a bottom pair is the only way I can make sense of it. I don't know.
Yeah. Sorry, excuse me. I wonder how performative that seemed to be with Jake Muzzin. Like, I get this is a serious issue, but him skating, oh, maybe he's going to join practice. Now he's taking, like, I don't know. I feel like you definitely have to operate under the assumption that he may not be available. And for that reason, you know, it's worth looking. But again, I tend to agree with both you and JD. Like, I just don't see the obvious slam dunk fit that's going to step in and be immediately impactful and not cost you an arm and a leg. You said you're not loving Gio. I want you to expand on that a little bit. What don't you like about the prospects of bringing in Mark Giordano? Did we lose Borno?
You got me? Hello, hello, sorry. This whole mute button is very complicated.
Unbelievable.
I know, it really is. So I heard JD saying that he didn't love Giordano. I'm more like, I guess I don't know how to feel about it, because the last thing I feel like the Leafs really need in terms of playing style is someone who just like makes the simple smart play and is not like a physical energy type guy. Like, I know having good players is good, and so I have to just like wrap my head around that idea for Giordano, but it all comes back to the complaint we've had for years with this team, is the pieces and fit. And I know Lindholm is not an answer here too. We're just grasping at straws, really. But it's not a natural fit with Giordano either. So it is. It's just tough to find the guy. And that's it. You know, you look at goaltending. Yeah, they have a goaltending issue. But if you can't find the guy, I don't know. I'm really torn. I realize I'm playing both sides of this here. But it's a tough spot they're in here. They got to do something, but you don't like the options out there.
Can you convince yourself, though, Borno? Can you convince yourself on Giordano if, you know, apparently he wants to be in Toronto? If that's the only way that you can mine some sort of value or prevent yourself from making that move where it's Nyes or a first-round pick going out, if he wants to be here and Seattle wants to do right by him and say, hey, we plucked you out of Calgary, your whole family moved because we thought we might be better than we are, and we want to make sure that you're happy with your next phase – can you, if you're the Leafs, sort of manipulate yourselves into thinking, hey, this guy can be exactly what we're missing here?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Like, you can talk yourself into it, particularly, you know, with the news that Dermott is out. And if it is, Toronto is a place he wants to go, so it's only going to cost you, you know, whatever it is, third-round pick or something like that, then, yeah, it's definitely going to be an upgrade for your team, and definitely can talk yourselves into it. I want more, and it's a greediness thing right now more than anything. It's not like I don't like that. It's just kind of hoping for a bigger solution here.
So I do not have a name that I love. Actually, I have one name that I love, but it's
Scott
not going to happen. No, I'd love them to get Jake DeBrusk. I think that would just be perfect. Honest to God, like, you go out and you get a guy that was in the room of the team that killed you. You go out and get a big body who is at a diminished asset, or like a diminished piece, right? A guy that has had a tough go, that isn't happy in his situation, who has a big family name, who I don't think is going to be afraid of the bright lights, who fits on your left wing, and who sits next to Tavares and gives you what I think you were looking for in the Richie contract. Like, I know that people are down on
DeBrusk. I think you just described Willie Nylander.
Hey, buddy, okay, well, here's the thing. This is where I'm kind of going with this, is where I feel most strongly about the market is I feel like if you can give John Tavares something on his wing, that's your highest avenue to improvement. Like, this is my thought on the goaltending. It's still the net of Jack Campbell. There's not an option out there where I go, wow, that would really impress me. You know who it would be is Varlamov. I'd love to get Varlamov, but here's the thing. I don't think that you're going to be able to get a good price on him, right? He's still got another year. You'd have to get them to eat some of the money, and that's involving Kyle Dubas getting something from Lou Lamoriello. Good luck on him giving you that for cheap. Like, not going to happen. So hard for me to believe that one gets done. All the other goalie options are essentially the same lottery ticket to me. There's also a what goalie is going to come in here with the pressure that's on the Maple Leafs and the way that their goaltenders have gone the last couple of years and feel good? Like, it's just – I don't want to do that. So I think that if there's a cheap goalie out there, you grab a lottery ticket to make sure that there's a buffer between you, Mrazek, and Shalgren. But other than that, you're not doing it. The blue line, I hate all the options. There's literally not a blue liner I like out there that I've seen the name of, and that includes Hampus Lindholm. And maybe I'll come around on that if they do make the trade in terms of, like, what pieces go out and how they make the pieces fit. But that is just your ultimate screwing up the puzzle pieces. Like, how are you going to have a blue line that has Hampus Lindholm, Morgan Riley, Jake Muzzin, TJ Brody, Rasmus Sandin? Like, where does that make sense? How does any of that... But those are great
five
names.
Five left-shot guys.
Yeah, they're great names, but none of them fit. Like, they don't fit together. You're playing this whole thing of, like, boy, where does anybody go and who plays what minutes? Whatever. Anyway, with the forwards, I'm like, Tavares the other night was great. He really was solid. And I just think he's still a really good hockey player. And for whatever reason, him and Nylander are just not a phenomenal pair. And if you can just, like, they're the marriage where they need a little bit of spice. They need something to spice up the marriage. And that's what I think is just go out and get somebody that is a mean body that fits next to the two of them, that'll go in the corners, that'll go in front of the net, that'll just do things like, it'll be the bunting, right? Just the energy piece on the line that is bringing it every single night heading into the postseason. And that's what I want to see. Because the Kerfoot thing hasn't worked as them as a line. I don't want to lean on it. I just want a little bit of flexibility for Tavares. And I'm saying, who cares about their $18 million together thing? Just triple down. Go all in on it. Find a forward. The only problem is like, I don't really know who that forward is. Because there don't seem to be a lot of those guys that fit that bill either.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the DeBrusk thing, you know, like, he's good when he's good, but he's like Nylander, man. He'll sleep through six games in a row. So,
I know.
That scares me a little bit.
But he's an RFA this summer, and it's like you put him with Tavares. Don't you feel like you could at least, like, I don't know, it just feels like a lottery ticket worth. Yes, get him engaged and have him be like, his role would be so defined here, you know? Yeah. And it's just. It's a stretch run of you're under a spotlight. You can make yourself a multi-millionaire with one good run here, buddy.
Yeah, so that's an option. Don't know if Boston would be wanting to send anyone they think could help you.
They would.
You know, looking around for energy guys, you know, another guy that Elliot mentioned was Simmons and Spezza and how they've been quietly looking to fix that issue team.
They're done.
Like, Simmons is not going to be happy as a Marley if that's what they're trying to say here, that this guy's not going to be a part of the lineup going forward. What what did interest me is he mentioned that the Islanders are quietly shopping Cal Clutterbuck, which Cal Clutterbuck I love. I know I'm like a lot of people in my brain. I have a 30-year-old version of Cal Clutterbuck or 28-year-old version, and he's not the guy he once was. But that, to me, is exactly what the Leafs need on their fourth line. At least a guy who wants to go out there and provide energy and run around and hit and forecheck and stuff like that. So that's a name that interests me. Obviously,
you play him that high up?
No, you can't play him above the fourth line.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
To me, the whole thing that you end up getting with trading for a forward that can play with Tavares is now other guys can bump down. And maybe even you end up with a scenario where you go, hey, we have a Tavares, Kasha, insert winger X line. And now William Nylander plays next to Alex Kerfoot and one of those other wingers. And you say, like, that's the balance that you're looking for. I know it looks bad on paper because Cuthbert said it. Like, it makes it seem as though you've got a fourth line with William Nylander on it, but I'm still at least considering it.
I just feel like watching, Tavares with Marner, that this is something they're going to have to do. Everyone loves the top line with Matthews, Marner, and Bunting, and they're like, this is the line. How can you break it up? They're the best line in the NHL. And I'm like, have you seen Matthews with anyone? Matthews with anyone scores goals. He shoots it in the hockey net. You know, I feel like if you play him with Nylander, that line is still going to produce for you. You might get a more inspired Willie. Tavares and Marner have history together. Tavares scored 47 beside him. I know. We constantly juggle these same couple lines around, but I feel like heading into the postseason, Tavares is going to need someone that isn't just Nylander and whoever. The worst line I've ever seen constructed, I think, was Kerfoot, Robertson, and Nylander. I've never seen the Leafs put together one that interested me less than that line, so that's not a solution.
What I find interesting, Bourne, is that the second and fourth lines are somewhat cut from the same cloth. Like, there is some similarity between both of them in that they've both kind of struggled, but they're both trying to do the same thing against different mismatches. Like, I understand that Wayne Simmonds has played on the fourth line for the most of the season, but they are kind of like offense oriented, and they're like, you're trying to get something out of Jason Spezza and trying to win lesser matchups out of the fourth line. I wonder if there was someone who could sort of make sense for both. I understand they can't play on the same line at the same time, but like a Tyler Mott, you look at him as a fourth liner, but maybe a guy who could play up in the lineup and bring the energy, straight line drive type of style that could potentially, you know, kickstart maybe Tavares and Nylander a little bit. And if it's not necessarily working that way, you stash a guy like that on your fourth line, he's probably going to have an impact, maybe sort of like Cal Clutterbuck.
Yeah, well, hey, listen, if they want to go ahead and add Mott and Clutterbuck and nothing else for the forward group, I'm fine with that. I don't worry about them scoring goals. I worry about energy and engagement. And both those guys, you know, they're both 5'10", so not monsters. But, I mean, a couple of guys who just go every single night and fight through battles. And, you know, I really like those names. So the solution for me has to come on D. I'm still kind of crossing my fingers and hoping Jack Campbell just like sorts himself out as a solution in goal. I don't like spending assets there. If Giordano wants to come over and he's cheap, you can talk me into that with Dermott on the way out. And then, you know, I still really, the big one is going to be, can they get that one more D-man? You know, it's funny seeing what Sherratt costs, because we've been talking about the fantasy play for the Leafs. The best case scenario, the guy is Scott Mayfield from the Islanders. With Sherratt costing, what was it, a first, a fourth, and a prospect? Like, Mayfield's going to cost you your hockey team, essentially. So that one's not happening, but at least someone of that mold is the goal.
So last thing before you go. And because this is what it kind of all comes down to with all that. You said you have to do something. I actually am in the camp of this is closer to the 2020 team, where I don't think you have to do much. I think you let the market develop and that you don't say that this is an all-in season. But a lot of that revolves around what the pressures are like up top, right? Do you feel like that there is still the stake of Dubas and Shanahan are fired after this season? Because if those guys are operating from that position where their backs are against the wall, then that's when you start to see those dangerous trades where you go, wait, the Leafs traded what for what at that deadline? And it becomes a mortgage the future to make sure that you keep your job now scenario. Like, it's been really tough to define whether or not those two guys are actually under some type of a job threat, because the season has been good. It's had a lot of ups. They've had some good signings, some bad signings. Like, they're going to end up in a playoff series potentially against a Tampa Bay or a Florida, or like a team that really, really is just right there on their level, a coin flip series that no one's expecting them to win regardless of what move they make at the deadline. Like, how do you feel about the futures of those two guys and whether or not this is still that quote-unquote last dance season that we portrayed it to be heading into the year?
Yeah, it's a good question. I do think that it's not as black and white as, you know, lose to Tampa Bay and it's over.
Exactly.
For Dubas. Like, I do think there's a world where, you know, you finish third in the division or even second in the division in a very good division, and then, you know, you go another seven games and things don't go perfectly. Like, I can see a world where they say, God, they did a lot of good things, that team, I can see it. I do think that if they just go out there and it's not great and they lose, where those guys are gone. So I just don't think it's cut and dried. You mentioned all the, you know, the good work that they have done over the past year or two or even beyond that, but it's just results oriented. Eventually the decision has been to keep the core. If the core doesn't get them through, they probably are in trouble. Now, one thing I will say is Kyle Dubas is young, and I don't think for his future in this business he would want to just flame, you know, scorched earth on the way out with some massive trades, because he still has a reputation in your past work as your own resume. So I don't worry that he's going to burn down the franchise for the good of, you know, trying to get through a round this season.
My only counter to that, though, is that this is still hockey. Like, look around some of the front offices, right? You're like, boy, that guy's doing this job here, huh? Like, okay. Like, it's hard to find good front office people, and I think that you could get an owner that looks at Kyle Dubas and says, oh, it was a bad situation in Toronto, and even if he does do some kind of a desperation trade, they would go, well, this is a guy who will do the things to win, you know? Like, there's still a lot of that around hockey, man. It's still that sport.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, it's not like I think he would go unemployed after
right.
doing that. I just don't see it. You know, this team too is, you know, we talk about this last dance and this, you know, the whole idea with this core. Like, the core is still under contract. They're still under contract next year. Like, I understand that it's not going to be easy to replicate a lot of the findings, but like, Kemp is back, Bunting is back. A lot of these deals, you know, Kasha's just an RFA. A lot of the good things they did were to take them through another season. So it is tough to not think that next season is going to be another good season for the Maple Leafs. So, his reputation and the way they look at him, it's really tough to predict how this is going to go. So let's just hope they win a couple rounds and we don't have to have that conversation.
Yeah, Justin Bourne, good, not good enough, man. Come on. Raise the bar here a little bit. Thanks so much for taking the time this morning, buddy. Looking forward to Real Kipper and Bourne a little later.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Justin Bourne, co-host of Real Kipper and Bourne, had a great piece you should check out, by the way, looking at what the Canadian teams around the NHL could do heading into the deadline here on Monday.
Was it great?
I mean, look. Well,
it was good.
The parts that he rips off from our conversations are great. The other parts, I don't really know.
That was a good throwback. We haven't done that in a while. That was a nice callback.
He hasn't ripped off our stuff in a while. So it's... Yeah, it's hard. Let's take a break. Let's come back with someone who is unquestionably great. Joe Siddle, former MLB catcher, current Sportsnet analyst. Let's close the day out on some more Jay's optimism. That's next. The Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan, Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Justin Cuthbert. Give them a follow at JD Bunkus, at JC Cuthbert. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast, The Fan Morning Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Get good things like the Wake and Rake picks, like Leafs ticket giveaways, and a whole lot of Matt Chapman talk the last couple of days. Joining us now to help us with a little more Matt Chapman talk, former MLB catcher, current Sportsnet analyst, Joe Siddle. Joe, how are you, man?
Fantastic, gentlemen. Good morning to everyone.
Yeah, it's a good day. It's a good week. JD's all excited. He's about to go disc golfing, and then it's day one of March Madness. And tomorrow we get Toronto Blue Jays spring training baseball. You're in Dunedin, right?
I am. I'm at the complex right now.
How is the buzz down there?
It just increased a bit yesterday when the Matt Chapman news broke.
I bet.
There's a lot of buzz. I mean, there's a lot of buzz just because of where this team has come and a couple of the off-season signings, and Kikuchi had arrived the other day. Lots of talk about Gausman being around. But the Chapman news was big yesterday, and I think we'd all agree, and most Blue Jays fans are quite aware, that third base spot was quite a hole for this team. And defense in general had to be better, and... You know, I still think people are not talking about his bat enough because he had the down year. And remember, he had the hip surgery in the past. I think this is a guy that's going to fit lower down a little bit in this lineup. And, you know, I always say hitting is contagious. Hitting philosophies are contagious. I've always felt this team is too right-handed. And I still think they are. Still want a left-handed bat. There's no question. But without getting too greedy, this is a nice add because – this is a team a few years ago. Remember, all those right-handed hitters, they had a lot of chase in them. They had a lot of strikeouts, swing and miss, too many similar type styles. But that has changed to somewhat dramatically. They've reduced the strikeouts, and I credit the staff and Guillermo Martinez and his staff on the approach. And we've heard Dante Bichette's name a lot over the last few years. Clearly, there's been a message, and it's working. And Teoscar Hernandez has probably had the biggest impact in that regard. He's really turned into more of a complete type hitter. I think all of the above can help Matt Chapman just integrate right into this lineup and try to regain that form he had a few years ago.
Well, all he needs to do is look at the track record of Oakland A's coming to the Blue Jays and say, this has got to make me feel confident in general. But man, I was gonna say, I'm such a sucker for those stories. I think it was Atkins who had the quote yesterday of, I went around and seeing the faces of all the guys as I told them the Chapman news, and I go, oh, I'm all in on this, right? I love that. But Blake brought up the buzz, and I kind of am curious about that, because this was such a, you know, likable group, and it felt like Semien was such an important part of their leadership core. And I just wonder if you've noticed anything different about spring this year, just these guys being back, the excitement, something that is like a little bit different around the feel of this team.
Yes, absolutely. And it's for two reasons. One, because the baseball lockout ended and there was a very good chance that none of us would be even here right now. And that was a real threat. The players knew that. The players felt that if this didn't go through, they knew that they may not have baseball till midsummer or later, because they felt that where the negotiations would have gone is that they would have been fighting for their service time and full salary. And that was going to be a whole other conversation with the owners. And I spoke to a few players that were just so relieved and very interesting. I'm sure you've probably talked about it a lot, but remember the big boys on the subcommittee voted 8-0 to shoot down this proposal. And I remember sitting literally in my place and watching all this news breaking. And as soon as I heard that, I just went, oh my goodness, you've got to be kidding me that they're not approving this. Because when your committee does that, I was finding it very difficult to believe that the rest of the player association would go against their subcommittee. But they did. And I had an interesting conversation with Ross Stripling yesterday. He was very grateful to the subcommittee and all those guys. We all know that they're big boys, and several of them are Boris clients, et cetera, et cetera. But I just think because they were in the room and in the fight the whole time, they felt that they could get more and more and more. From the outside, I felt much like, and I told Stripling this yesterday, I said, I think you guys did just fine. You can't get everything back in one negotiation. So without talking too much business, a lot of the players, I think, clearly stepped up and made their point, and it spoke volumes when they approved that thing. So that's the first reason that this is a different spring training and a different excitement. But then, of course, the second one is where this team's at and all the additions. And, you know, talk about probably 2 and 3 and 4 years ago, we were probably earmarking 2021 to compete, but 2022 is probably the first year to really be all in. And to me, it's right on schedule. And, you know, they're not done yet. It's still only, what is it, March 17th. So who knows what else is at play here? I talked about a left-handed bat. I don't know if Jose Ramirez is still a possibility, but if he is, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it sounded – we had Shai Davidi on earlier, and he didn't rule it out entirely, whether it's now or whether it's something they revisit at the trade deadline. You know, it would be quite a week. You say Kikuchi comes in, and then Matt Chapman, and you chase it with Jose Ramirez. Joe, I want to ask you about Matt Chapman. I know you were a back catcher, and that's the approach you take to your analysis sometimes. When you're one of the Blue Jays catchers and you're looking at how you're going to handle Ryu and Kikuchi and even Manoah and Barrios, who they give up a fair amount of contact to the left side of the infield, which, great, you just got Matt Chapman. That's awesome. How much of the shift in strategy for a pitcher is coming from the catcher? Like, how much as a catcher are you adjusting your game plan and adjusting how you're managing your pitchers now that you know you've got Chapman there instead of a rotating cast of subpar defenders?
Well, if every pitcher was that good and you could have hitters hit it where you want them to, they'd be too many pitchers in this plan, and that'd be very difficult to do. You work with what you have, and you work with your pitcher strengths, and you attack that with the hitter's weaknesses. So it's a combination, but you don't change who Hyunjin Ryu is. You don't change necessarily. Now, I shouldn't say that, because as we know, with Kikuchi arriving, rough second half last year, there's a lot of talk about why, and will some changes in his repertoire be in place? This is going to be up to Pete Walker and his staff. But in general, no, you catch and call a game according to your pitcher's strengths. And whatever their strengths are, if it's sinking it in on right-handers or if it's the sliders away, if they happen to get a lot of ground balls to the left side, then, of course, we've saw many times over, even last year, you know, Charlie was trying to put his best defensive lineup out there, for example, when Ryu is on the mound, like Espinal at third, say, because you want your best defense. You know you're going to get those ground balls. But even when you look in the bullpen, you know, Tim Mays is a guy that gets a lot of ground balls in weak contact. Mm-hmm. Adam Simber gets a lot of ground balls, not a lot of strikeouts. So there are balls in play with his funky delivering and a lot of sink that he has on the ball. And the reason I say Mays and Simber out of the bullpen too is because it's not just for the first five innings. It's late in the game too, because when you've got a sinking ball, the hitters tend to catch the top of the baseball. Well, guess where that goes? Into the ground. So you don't necessarily change how you're going to make a pitcher pitch. They have to pitch with their strengths and to their strengths. It just so happens that, you know, Kikuchi and Ryu are two guys, especially, that get a lot of balls to the left side of the infield. So that probably makes Chapman an even more important acquisition.
Yeah, it wasn't the case last year quite as much, but historically, Jordan Romano, another guy that gets a fair amount of ground balls. Joe, I want to ask you, there was some talk prior to the Matt Chapman acquisition that a way the Toronto Blue Jays could get another catching prospect in Gabriel Moreno to the major leagues a little sooner, or maybe extend his shelf life when he gets there, is to have him get some reps at third base. He did a little bit at AAA last year. I think he did it a little bit in the Arizona Fall League. The Matt Chapman acquisition, I would imagine, puts a damper in that a little bit. But in terms of catching prospects in general, how do you feel about guys getting reps at other positions? If the Jays were going to get Moreno some third base reps, if they were going to get, say, Alejandro Kirk some first base reps, because there are a lot of catchers in this organization, and obviously, usually you only have two spots for a catcher.
Yeah, I think you're starting to play with a little fire. That's not as easy as people think. And I'm not familiar enough with Moreno, what he has done in the past, and if he can make that transition. Played with a guy by the name of Greg Colbrin. I was coming up in the minor leagues with the Expos. I'm going back a ways now. But he went from third base to catcher because he could flat out hit. And he did a decent job behind the plate. Turned out to be more of a hitter at the big league level. But it's hard to think about moving from catcher to another position or behind the plate and think that they're going to be any kind of defender to mix the bat in the lineup. And you're talking about guys again. And JD, I know you're about to chime in here because we've gone at it about Alejandro Kirk. I know you thought he was going to be Major League All-Star by now. But
That was a cheap shot. That was a real cheap shot. But okay, yeah, no, it's fine.
That's why I used your name. But you know what I mean. These guys are so young still. So to me, honestly, guys, I keep hearing Moreno's name. I haven't seen him play a whole lot. I hear wonderful things, and that's great. Hopefully he is the Blue Jays catcher of the future. But that's for another day for me. And even for this year, will we see him this year? Hey, maybe if he's in Triple A and he's doing great, and an injury at the big leagues, whatever. But I'm not really counting on that. This is a team trying to win a World Series. You want to put a young kid behind the plate that's just still learning how to call a game? No, that's for a developing team that's looking to compete in a few years. So that's not even under my radar. I kind of scoff at those conversations because I don't even consider them. Right now, you have what you have in Jansen and McGuire. Now, could Kirk and Moreno be in that mix? Sure, but that's nowhere near, I don't think, your primary catcher right now or even any time this year.
Joe, it hurts me when you attack me unprovoked that way.
I'm right here.
Yeah. No. Actually, if you were right here, I wouldn't say any of this. I would just be like, I agree with Joe. you're in Florida, though. So I still like Kirk. I still believe in the bat, but you're right. The defense is going to matter in calling games. I think this is a massive season for Danny Jansen. I really do. What he showed at the end of last year and just where this team is in terms of the developmental track. I actually think that there's a scenario that I'm comfortable with in which Kirk and Moreno are not even in the Blue Jays organization. Like you mentioned the Ramirez thing. I think the Jays are so close. When you talked about the lefty bat and the fit and two bag and all that stuff, if I'm Toronto, I'm offering those guys to Cleveland tomorrow if they're interested in them and saying, would you like them to be your catchers of the future? Because you just said it. It's win now today. It's win now in the next 4 years. And as good as Moreno might be, the idea that he's going to be the catcher backstopping this Blue Jays team, it's hard for me to believe. But you know what I could see? Ramirez hitting .300 on this Blue Jays in this lineup and completely changing the trajectory of what they do for a World Series this year. Like taking them five wins? Is that outrageous to think that he's worth that? I don't think so. Like that puts you into World Series conversations. Now there's that bye that you want to have heading into the postseason that the Blue Jays would desperately covet. I don't know, man. To me, this feels like that's the perfect player. This is the perfect time, and no asset that is off your roster is too much for me.
I have felt since November that Jose Ramirez would be the perfect fit, but I was thinking for third base. They acquired Chapman, and now I still hear rumblings about maybe for second base, and I said, bring it on and do it right now. I wish I was in the room to know what the ask is going to be. You know, you hear Moreno's name, you hear Manoah's name, so It would be very interesting. I would find a way to package whatever it takes to get Jose Ramirez. And, you know, the tricky part is Cleveland's still trying to compete. They've got great pitching, you know, the extra playoff spot. So is the price higher? Are they still shopping him? Like, I hope Jose Ramirez, as like any other Blue Jays fan, is in a Blue Jays uniform very soon. Hard to say what the ask. When you go back to like Kirk and Moreno too, though, like, you got to remember, guys, Kirk is still, so he was in A ball when he came back up to the big leagues there.
Stunt,
I mean, he needs to play. But and I don't, like, he does. He handles the bat. I love the way he swings the bat. But he needs to play. So do he and Moreno spend some time in AAA together, DHing and catching and getting some reps and reps and reps, because Kirk needs to play. Moreno, same thing. And if you're going to develop, that's it. But, hey, if they're not in Blue Jays uniforms because there's a trade package for Jose Ramirez, they're already in playoff and World Series contention. You add Jose Ramirez, and it's through the roof like this. It's hard to believe what the Blue Jays keep doing. This is crazy. And I don't want to say the final piece would be Jose Ramirez, because they probably already have the final piece. But, my goodness, what a final piece that would be.
JD, I'll tell you this. I know you're open to trading those guys anyway, but if you're looking at what Cleveland might be looking for back, I love the guy. But Luke Maley currently projects as like a split time back catcher for Cleveland. So
this is what I'm saying, though.
You might be Kirk able to help their current day roster while getting Jose Ramirez from there.
There's no more DH spot for Kirk. Okay, like there's not as many. They need guys to get off their feet, and they're going to need DH spots for Springer. Like they're going to need him for I don't really want to have him be the. I'm with Joe. He needs to play. He needs to swing the bat. I love Kirk. If they keep him, fine. It is what it is. I'd still rather have him as the backup option. I think he can handle that better than McGuire can. But either way, just in terms of what he brings, it's more of a plus thing. My only point is that Ramirez is just, this is not a you're worried about a Kirk or a Moreno thing. Like, I'm not touching Manoa because he's your number two starter, and he's a guy that we already know what he is. But I'm done with this fallacy of Cleveland's going to compete and Cleveland's trying to, like, Joe, I'm just not with you on it. Like, Cleveland is a bunch of losers. They never give anybody any money. They just want prospects. Like, they want to lose forever. That's who they are. Like, that's Cleveland. So, just go Guardians this, Guardians that. They just trade anything, get Ramirez. You're right. Get Ramirez. So, for anything that it costs off the roster.
And I agree with that 100%. It's hard to know where Cleveland is. I say that. I don't know what it's like in the negotiating room. I'm not sure where Cleveland is at. We can say from the outside that they've got good pitching. It's the AL Central. I mean, I guess you're afraid of the White Sox, but who else? Sure, the Tigers are coming a bit, but I mean, there is any reason, but when you look at the AL East, you look at the number of teams, it's not going to be easy for Cleveland to make the playoffs. And again, that's why I think they're still ripe for the picking. Do they increase the price because they're, quote, think they're in it for a final playoff spot? Maybe, but that's why, when you're not in the room, it's really hard to know. But getting back to the original thought, give up whatever it takes to get Ramirez in a Blue Jays uniform.
Joe Siddall, spring training baseball kicks off tomorrow. I know we don't know a lineup or anything like that yet, but quickly, what's the thing you're most looking forward to when games get underway tomorrow?
You know, just baseball being back is going to be a wonderful thing, but I almost feel like a manager in a sense that, like, health, and more health. Like, this spring training scares me a little bit, only because, you know, we saw the summer camp in 2020, and then you just worry about the preparation. Now, a lot of guys, baseball's a little different now. A lot of guys have their personal trainers and people in the off season when they're working out. And it certainly appears as though guys, and I guess I'm really talking about pitching right now, but most guys were really following a pretty good program, pretty good regime. And from what I've heard, a lot of the Blue Jays, the staff had these guys on programs before December 1st, before the lockout started, so that they would be in a good place when they got here. We saw Barrios. He was up and down twice the other day in live batting practice on the field. That would tell me he's ready to go into a game and not just pitch that one or two. He might go two and maybe even a third. We'll see. But I think they have progressed a little further and are ready because things started late. But I've always said, for how many years I've been in this game now, when you go to spring training, you tend to do things you haven't done before. And that, now I'm referring to position players. You work out all you want. You're in the greatest shape. We hear it all the time. And you've hit. You've done all these things. But you haven't necessarily hit a base hit into the gap and rounded first and thought about going for a double or sliding in a second. Like, a lot of those little things, guys don't necessarily, I don't think, do in the offseason. And those are the things that when that side gets a little sore the next morning or that hamstring is a little tighter, those are the things I always worry about in a spring training like this, and I will be worrying about it until April, into the month of April.
Even so, the little stuff like your – Oh. Even the little stuff, you're worried about scraping up your leg a little on the, because your slide mechanics are off and all that little stuff that
or
can get rusty
the
over
knee
the winter.
Or, yeah. So that's the stuff I'll be watching for. And I'll be talking to guys and asking them physically how they feel, because I think that's going to be very intriguing. It's going to be the same for everybody all around baseball, but it's just going to be a very real thing, I think. And, I'm sure the hitters will still be behind the pitchers early in spring training. That's not going to change simply because they haven't been out here facing live pitching in games. It's starting late, but whether that starts February 25th or March 18th, it doesn't really matter. It's the fact that these hitters are playing the game for the first time. And they need ABs. And that's been the big question for a number of years. And I don't think anybody's figured it out. Every hitter is different, but how many at-bats do you need before you get ready for the season? Because the Blue Jays have traditionally been slow offensively in April. And, you know, that can put you behind the eight ball. Now, the nice part about where I'm standing right now at the Blue Jays player development complex where spring training is going on, the minor leaguers are right here to my right. Big leaguers are off to my left. So the other thing is, on days like tomorrow when there's a game on the road, maybe some guys stay back and get some at-bats in a minor league game. So hopefully those are the opportunities that are available to them now with this spectacular complex I'm standing in front of right now. So you can do those things. And that's okay, too. I don't care if George Springer goes onto the minor league field and gets four at-bats one day. They're still at-bats against live pitch. They're not big leaguers, but it's game action. It's playing in the game. And there should be opportunities for that, I'm guessing, as well.
Someone who is showing no rust from the offseason, Joe Siddall, Sportsnet analyst. Thanks so much for taking the time this morning, man. Enjoy Dunedin.
All right, guys. Take care. This should be a fun one.
It sure should be. That was Joe Siddall, former MLB catcher, current Sportsnet analyst. This has been the Fan Morning Show. We got Leafs Canes tonight at 7 p.m. on Sportsnet. We'll be back tomorrow to talk whatever else the Jays might do, whatever the Leafs might do, talk a little March Madness, all that and more tomorrow. Me and Justin Cuthbert, JD's off. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.